You're listening to Nowhere to Run with Chris White on the Revelations Radio Network. Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to Nowhere to Run. Thank you for tuning into the show. If you have any questions for me, you can email me at nowheretorun1984@gmail.com. Sorry for the delay in the shows here. I know it's been more than a few weeks, and that's been because just really super, super ultra busy with the planning for Africa and with Ancient Aliens Debunked. I'll talk about both of those things in a minute. But one thing I wanted to mention about emailing me is that I'm leaving in just a few days now. It's a little less than 2 weeks, about 12 days, and I'll be gone for about 70 days, a little over 2 months. And during that time, I won't have access to the internet. Well, it'll be spotty at best, and so I won't be answering emails like I am now. What I hope to do is to set up an autoresponder that will have a comprehensive frequently asked questions and links to other things that people might be writing me about. So that'll have a good purpose because I'm looking forward to sitting down and putting together a frequently asked questions thing because I know it can have use in other applications as well. So the next few months, if you try to write me that, I won't be there. That doesn't mean that I can't read emails because when I do get a chance to get to the internet, which I'm sure will be, once a week or something like that, at least, maybe even more. I don't really know yet. But when I do, I'll be able to check all the emails and read them. So if there's something important, definitely email me. I'll still be able to read it and respond if necessary, if it's important. But I don't want to discourage you from writing because if it's something that you would like to hear from me about, I'll have my wife, Connie, be checking emails, and she'll be letting me know if something's important, and she'll be able to help respond as well. So, she's also going to help them be forwarded to the places that need to go. For instance, if you're ordering a Christianity 101 DVD, which, again, are all free, but you still have to, fill out a little form to know where to send it, then she will be forwarding those to Sam, who will be taking care of the mailing of those items and stuff. So, and some other things are going on as far as the designation of duties while I'm gone. Tim Kilkenny from various programs on the Revelations Radio Network will be taking over the duties of Revelations Radio Network and also posting RRN Weekly and RRN Classic shows, as well as just maintaining the website, looking for problems. Is also, he's maintaining all of my websites, all the WordPress websites anyway, of which I have about 23 or so. About that, the reason I know I have 23 websites is because of a recent virus attack on all my websites. And I don't know, it was like a perfect storm of problems. But it was severely infected. If you visited my any of my sites, just about over the last month or so, you probably, probably were definitely in danger of being infected if you weren't actually infected. Sorry, my phone is going off there. But anyway, that's all taken care of now. It's totally safe to go to the sites. But what I had to do is basically strip them all of any kind of visual, anything visual. So I took all the themes away. And so it's real basic sites, and nothing is very elaborate. And I probably could go through now and put some themes on there and make them pretty or whatnot, but I just don't have the time right now. So I just got them to where they are functional, and they're extremely secure. One good blessing that occurred was I know a whole lot more about website security than I did before. So we're glad for that. I'll talk about some other things here later on, but one of the issues that has been keeping me busy is the Ancient Aliens Debunked project. And it's been challenging to get prepared for Africa with that, because in a lot of the preparations for Africa are Ancient Aliens Debunked related, because I want to write the script while I'm in Africa. And because I won't have access to the internet, I'm trying to just collect everything I can, whether it's a paper or a book or just website information, and put it all on an e-reader, a Amazon Kindle, so that which has a really long battery life, like 13 hours or something, so I can read about all these things as I try to write the script. So, but you know, the Ancient Aliens question is just so vast. I mean, there's so many mysteries that require a lot of research. It's like, you know, debunking everything. It's like this debunk all mysteries movie. I mean, in a way, and it's trying to do it really quickly too. But in order to debunk anything, you have to spend a lot of time learning about it before you can even understand what's going on with it. The kind of rule of thumb with debunking is that if you are going to debunk something, you have to know more about it than the person who made the false claim about it. So whoever knows the most wins, basically. And very often deception is just like that. It presumes that you won't or don't want to go look up and learn more about it than they do. So as a result, I have a ton of stuff to research. But thankfully, I've had a great team of researchers that has just done a phenomenal job helping me with that. And they've been, you know, the reports are coming in about various issues, and everybody's just done a spectacular job. All that's pretty well done. As far as their work, there's still a few out, but pretty much all of them are done. And now it's just kind of on my up to me to sort of work it all out. Just got done with one that I thought I would mention because it's something that I've thought about for a long time and didn't really have any ideas about it. I think I mentioned in one of the recent episodes that I tried to keep an open mind with a lot of this stuff. I mean, I really didn't know about the building of these ancient megalith sites like the pyramids or Baalbek or Puma Punku or any of these things. I mean, I was open to, you know, a lot of weird possibilities with all that stuff. And I just knew that I hadn't really researched it very much other than like what I did during, you know, during the process of getting deceived about it, you know, in the New Age or with Ike or Sitchin. Everybody that ever told me anything about Baalbek always had an agenda. So I only knew like a little bit. Although I thought I knew a lot. So I went into it with an open mind, and I have heard this from so many of the people on the research team now that it's just not as fascinating as they thought. You know, they also went into it with a similar mindset that, hey, you know, whatever it is, you know, it could be supernatural in some way, whatever. But I've heard from many people now that it's just like, you know, it's just not that weird. You know, it's pretty mundane. It's pretty humdrum in a lot of these things. But I wanted to talk about one in particular, which is Baalbek. Baalbek is in Lebanon, and I'm sure many of you know exactly what I'm talking about when I mention that. But just for those of you that don't, I'll give you the quick thumbnail. Baalbek is a place where the largest stones that have ever been quarried or placed are. These stones that encompass this particular wall, there's three of them. They call them the Trithilon stones, or I don't know exactly how to pronounce that, but it's basically three of them. They're about 800 tons each, give or take. Some people say 1,000 tons, whatever. And there's also two other stones around there, one of them called the Stone of the Pregnant Woman, that are still in the quarry. They, for whatever reason, were never actually taken out of the quarry. And they are a little bit larger than the stones in the actual Trithilon. They are about 1,200 tons, 1,000 to 1,200, give or take, depending on who you're listening to. And so these are absolutely huge stones. They're the biggest, as I mentioned, ever quarried or placed. And Ancient Aliens says all kinds of stuff about this. The old story is that that Zachariah Sitchin started with this is that it was a place for rockets to land and to take off, and for some unknown reason they need really, really big stones underneath their rockets. So whatever, that's, and he has a lot of sort of backstory to that, with, you know, that Gilgamesh called it the landing place, and there's all this sort of nonsense that he says about the Sumerian texts, and I don't think I'm going to go into that right now. I'll go into that in the video, because it'll make a lot more sense in context of what they claim. But I will say a little bit about the stones and how they were quarried and everything that went down there. one of the things an Ancient Alien says about Baalbek is how, why would anybody do this? You know, these stones are so big. Keep in mind that the Trithalon stones are a part of a wall. They're not as if they are like a part of the platform. Like that's the way that they kind of make you think that these things are like make the platform, but they're actually sitting on top of smaller stones as a part of a outer wall, the western perimeter of Baalbek, the Baalbek complex. Let me describe that a little bit. The Baalbek complex has about three temples on it, one to Jupiter, for instance, or you know, different gods changed over time or whatnot. But there's three temples. It's kind of like a big courtyard, if you will. And on the western perimeter, there is a big wall, and that wall is what has the Trithalon stones in it side by side. So the claims are always, why would they put these, such big stones on top of these other stones? And they just obviously come up with nothing, or intentionally or otherwise, on Ancient Aliens. So they say it's to land spaceships. But there's actually a awesome reason for that huge wall on the western side. And if you look up Baalbek in just about any, you know, actual archaeological literature or anything, they call the western wall a retaining wall. Just point blank, it's a retaining wall. And that just, that says, I mean, it's a retaining wall is to hold back the earth. And whenever you're on a slope or something like that, or there's soil erosion or whatnot, you need a big retaining wall. It's also necessary. The Romans and the Greeks used them quite frequently in the making of their auditoriums, of which was very important in Greek and Roman culture, because they would be indented in the ground, so they always had to build these retaining walls to keep back the earth. It's a big engineering thing that they did, and they have to be exceedingly strong. There's a lot of math and stuff that has to go in with it, because they're holding back, you know, a huge amount of earth. And Baalbek is a very interesting site for this reason. The western wall is sitting on, I mean, it's the on the downhill side of this hill. It's literally there to hold back the soil erosion. That area in the Valley of Baca is very endangered because of the soil erosion problem. If you and one of the reasons, if you look up soil erosion, you'll see that the primary man-made cause of soil erosion is deforestation. Lebanon in general is severely deforested. I'm sure you may have heard of the cedars of Lebanon. It was made famous in ancient times. Their wood, the cedars of Lebanon, were just world-renowned. The Bible talks about Solomon using so much of their wood and paying them so much for it. And some people believe that was probably when a big majority of the deforestation happened. But nevertheless, we do know that there are almost no more cedars in Lebanon because of massive deforestation. And see, trees keep the soil from eroding because of the root system, keep the soil from moving. In addition, the raindrops have to hit the leaves, and not just the leaves, but they're also, their velocity is slowed because of the foliage that accumulates on the ground over time. So without trees, raindrops have their full velocity on the soil, and ultimately, over time, cause massive soil erosion, which I was showing Ghani, who did the research for Baalbek. He did a lot of the research, turned up so much stuff in debunking the Sumerian claims about Gilgamesh or whatever. And I was showing him this, or I don't think I actually showed him the document, but I mentioned the document of the UN paper that was in 2006 about the massive problem of soil erosion at Baalbek. But I mean, the houses there are, their foundations are moving. It's making the whole area uninhabitable. So it's a national crisis, this soil erosion problem. You know, it's a really interesting thing is that if you look at Easter Island, well, let me put it this way. If you look at up soil erosion on Wikipedia, they will have a picture of Easter Island. And some of you may be familiar with the recent finds that some of the Moai, that is the big heads on Easter Island, have full bodies. I mean, they're actually covered up to their heads in soil. And it's actually for the exact same reason. One of the things people say about Easter Island is that how could they do that? Because they didn't have trees on the island in which to do that. And they needed trees to make the sleds. They needed trees to make the levers to lift them and to place them. And so that's one of the things they say must be aliens because there wasn't any trees. But the fact is that there used to be a lot of trees on Easter Island. But because they've made literally thousands of these moai over the course of hundreds and hundreds of years, they deforested, there was a deforestation of the entire island, or mostly the entire island. And as a result, the soil erosion problem at Easter Island is notorious now. And, hence you have the huge, the covering of these moai up to their necks. You can actually see the soil erosion at Baalbek too. If you look at it, the pictures of the stone of the pregnant woman, you can see it's obviously eroded. The soil is all around it and stuff like that. All that to say is that there was a really good reason to put a western huge blocks at the western end of Baalbek for soil erosion purposes. If not, the whole complex was in danger. I mean, the stones at the bottom would have been easily moved by the encroaching earth. It was just an engineering necessity, basically. And some interesting stuff about this is that when making retaining walls, megaliths, the heavier the stones, the better. That's the sort of rule of thumb with retaining walls. And actually, sometimes they will put the larger stones on top of the smaller stones to reinforce them because of their weight. So nothing is out of the ordinary at Baalbek in that regard. Most people, when I was learning about this from all the New Age sources and stuff like that, they would always say, you know, the bottom of this thing is clearly not Roman. But first of all, you need to know, everybody agrees that the temple was Roman. It was Greek and Roman after it. But they also agree that there was an original site. The site has been sacred for a long time. But if you listen to the presentations that people say on this, they really skew the data. They make you think that the platform has been there since ancient times, because that fits with the theory that aliens were there and used it to lift their rockets off or whatnot. But really, what was there in ancient times was a small temple, probably where the modern-day Temple of Jupiter or something. Keep in mind, there's a massive platform there now, and there's three temples. So back in the ancient days, there was probably one of those temples, no retaining wall or anything like that. But they kind of build that case up and sort of get in your mind that the platform or that retaining wall was there beforehand. The way I always assumed it was that the temple was built on top of the platform, and the platform was there from ancient times, because that's the way they make you think. But that's not the case at all. The Romans were super duper skilled at moving heavy blocks. They actually had cranes at Baalbek, multiple cranes at Baalbek. There were claims that they have holes in some of the stones. They're called, Lewis holes. They could lift up one side of that thing. They could crib it up, lift one, counterweight the other side. Just like that guy that does lifts those Stonehenge blocks in his backyard. Not the Coral Castle guy, but the modern guy who by himself, rises Stonehenge blocks, just by doing simple, just engineering stuff, moving the counterweights to one side, put a piece of wood on the end, do it on the other side, redo it, whatever. You could do all that stuff very easily. But here's an interesting tidbit. At the same time the Romans were doing this, they were at Baalbek for about 200 years. I mean, that's a long time for the greatest purse in the ancient world to be dedicated to building a site. They were at Baalbek for 200 or something years until they abandoned the project. They never did complete the project. But at that same time, there was also another retaining wall being built, technically by the Romans. It was built by Herod, but Herod was, basically he was a Roman, a Roman something king. The Romans put Herod in place, and everybody knew it, he was proud of that fact. So, he tried to downplay it to the Jews, but basically, Herod the Great built what's known as the Herod's Temple, which of what is standing today is, guess what? The Western Wall, guess what that is? It's a retaining wall. And it has in it several stones, one of which is I mean, only slightly less big than the Baalbek stones. It's like 500 or 600 tons, and between 500 and 600 tons anyway. And it's there for the same purpose, because it's a retaining wall and you need super, super big, complete stones. And the bigger the stone is and the heavier the stone is, the better your retaining wall is. So built at the same time virtually as the others, for the same purpose of retaining wall. So Herod wasn't an alien. You know, you only had to be just slightly more skilled than Herod to do the Baalbek retaining wall. And I've got lots of pictures of this. It's kind of hard to find really good pictures of the western side of this. But I will, if you go to my website, which is no longer has any viruses, you can go to, go to nowheretorunradio.com. And in this show, which I'll post probably on 5/22/2012, I'll put a link to some pictures where you can see the western side of Baalbek and how the soil is encroaching there. They have planted some trees now in that area, right on that western side, to sort of prevent the erosion. Tree planting is something that is a big part in Lebanon right now. They're trying to do that to sort of save the rest of what they've got. So that's pretty interesting. There was a few things other than that I wanted to mention about that. The people that say that the bottom of that wasn't Roman or whatever are basing that off of something that Sitchin and von Daniken based it off of, which was a book that was written before anybody had ever done an excavation at Baalbek. And all the excavations after that have shown conclusively that, hey, this is clearly Roman. And they'll always say things like, I mean, the typical website will say of the Baalbek statue, or not statue, but blocks, this is not Roman in any way, shape, or form. They just sort of say that. This block isn't of the Roman style. And one wonders what the Roman style is in that context. It's a big block, you know. It's like I mentioned, it's very similar to the Herodian temple and others. It's just something that conspiracy sites say to put that idea in your mind that the Romans couldn't do it because they need you to believe that aliens did it. So, but yeah, it's thoroughly Roman in every way. But yes, it was built. That site was sacred for a long time before that, in Canaan, and they did have a temple there, probably because it was on a hill and probably because it was close to a quarry. That brings me to the next part about moving these stones. How to move these stones? Well, again, the Romans, they moved, let's just, to be safe, 300, 400 ton pillars from Egypt to Rome. Okay. This quarry is like not even half a mile from Baalbek. I mean, it's a really close quarry. You could see it on Google Earth. Thanks to Ghani, he made a little thing there on Google Earth to show how close the quarry was, or at least how close the stone of the pregnant woman, which is in a quarry, was. But the Romans were taking, you know, stones at least, you know, half that size, a little less than half, and dragging them all over the known world, to dragging them from Egypt to Rome or Paris or whatever. And they had all kinds of ways to do that. So for Romans dragging stones, it was not so hard. But what makes this a little bit different, people say, well, you have to lift this. And Ancient Aliens goes to some length to say, you got to lift these stones. Nobody can lift these stones. And they always bring out the, no crane today could lift it. They got a guy like that's supposedly some stone expert standing next to a 5-ton stone and saying, this stone right here couldn't be lifted by the heaviest crane that we could rent. I was thinking, 5 tons? I mean, I used to work in a business that rented equipment to lift really, really heavy equipment. It was a rigging company for heavy lift machinery and stuff like that. And I know, I mean, 5-ton hoist was like the least you could, you know, they had 1-2-ton hoist, but I mean, 5-ton was a very, very small hoist, and cranes were way more capable than that. So he's basically saying the one that he rented couldn't lift it, which is funny because, I mean, that's about the capacity of the Roman stone, the Roman cranes, you know, that people say, well, they could only lift 5 tons. You know, a Roman crane could lift what he said that modern day cranes couldn't do. Anyway, beside the point, I suppose. The point I'm making here about Baalbek and the Triathlon stones is that they probably didn't even need to be lifted, because the quarry And there are some conflicting reports about this. I have people saying, no, the quarry's downhill. No, the quarry's uphill. But all the more scholarly stuff, and it's hard to, without being there and actually walking around, I can't tell for sure, but I'm going to make sure I know this before I say it. But, well, at least in the movie, I guess I can say it to you guys because you don't care. But I'm almost confident, 100% confident, that the quarry was 15 meters uphill. In any case, it's not very far, and it's not very much of a slant. I mean, even if it was 15 meters in the other direction, you can see a picture from Baalbek or the Stone of the Pregnant Woman to the temple and see, you know, it's not much. But the more scholarly reports say that it's 15 meters at least uphill, meaning that all you had to do was build a little rubble heap there. You actually could drag this thing right over that thing, not actually have to lift it. Technically, if the thing is uphill, then you don't have to lift the stone if we're placing it somewhere that is 15 meters one way or the other. So that totally takes care of the whole problem of lifting the stones. You would still have to move the stones. But as anybody will tell you, that as long as you can get just a pebble underneath that stone, you can actually move it pretty easily as long as it's on a stone surface. And that's what the guy that does all this stuff in his backyard shows so easily. You know, he's pushing with one hand these multi-ton rocks because he's got a little pebble underneath it. And so there's all kinds of little tricks that they knew about there. The Romans have drawings all over the stones, including the Triathlon stones, of their plans at Baalbek and stuff like that. So recent study was showing all that stuff. So, you know, Baalbek is just not that fascinating. Yes, it's fascinating for engineering purposes and Roman and Greek, you know, technology in that sort of very mundane sense. But it's not a spaceport, and it doesn't require Nephilim. And, you know, I was so convinced, you know, before, every time I'd hear about megalith sites, I'm like, well, Nephilim. But, you know, that's not even that biblical, really. I mean, there's no indication that the Nephilim built this stuff. And plus, you know, it was post-flood. I mean, technically, there shouldn't be all that many Nephilim running around. But, and it would seem, and I've been saying that for a long time, but, you know, after this research, it's just like, you know, this is not that mystic. And perhaps it's better that we stop being a little too quick to look for New Agey sort of explanations to some of these things. I mean, you know me, I mean, I'm all there with the basics and all this stuff, but we ought not to see conspiracy where there is none. And I don't think Baalbek, at least, is a conspiracy or was done in a supernatural way. I certainly don't think it was done by levitation and all these things that the New Agers say. I guess that's a good transition into the other thing I wanted to talk about, which was I was listening to this secular conspiracy news show, and I was talking about how we need to go out and tell people about all this stuff, and it's really important, and they're going to start, you know, rounding people up in camps any day now, and those kinds of ideas that we've been hearing for the last 10-plus years. And I don't mean to sort of disparage the idea, because I do think that that stuff is very important, and that it's mostly true, and that I don't know when or whatnot, but at some point, political dissidents, people that are good info warriors, will be rounded up and killed and all that stuff. I don't know when or whatnot, but certainly being a political dissident is not something that is going to be looked upon with any favor, to say the least, when all this control grid gets put in place. But I was just thinking as they were saying this, I was like, oh man, I don't want to die for the info war. I don't want to go out because I was telling people about the, you know, this stuff, you know. I was just thinking about, you know, I mean, at one hand, I don't want to disparage it, because I know that certain people play very important roles in that. I'm thinking of like Dan Stockin, who was a guy, just what a great guy, great Christian guy too. And he is basically the go-to fluoride guy. He's the guy that really single-handedly was able to work with the media, you know, send out these press releases, do all this stuff to get everybody on board. I mean, he got like all these reporters, different news people to do stories on fluoride, and really just he almost single-handedly got all the cities that are that are certainly around in Tennessee, to in fluoridation, because he was a really smart guy in the way that he presented the information and stuff like that. And so, yeah, we need Dan Stockins out there, and we need people to do those things that they have on their heart to do. But I guess I'm really talking more generally to the Christian out there, and I'm talking about the Christian who has had a heart change and is really knows what I am talking about when you look around and you see no longer the things that are necessary is not telling people the nuts and bolts of the conspiracy and how useless that is. Ultimately, because Satan's doing that with your Ikes and Maxwells and Tessarians and Swerdlows and Wilcox and on and on and on and on. I mean, Watson, I could just never stop telling you about people that are destroying people's lives and souls, or at least playing a part in it. And they're telling them about conspiracy stuff. The most important thing is not telling people about conspiracy stuff. It's just not. And if I oftentimes get emails like, hey, I'm trying to tell everybody I can about this, but nobody's listening. They're looking at me like whatever, you know, don't let that burden you so much. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. I've said it before about talking about this. Don't let your heart be so concerned with this stuff that that's all you want to talk about. And I understand from a worldly point of view, from a secular point of view, what else is so epic? What else is so important? And as Christ said, you know, go make disciples of all men. That's the issue. We need to be making disciples of all men. We need to be training them about the word and teaching them about those things. If you don't know those things, the most important thing you could do to fight the New World Order is what your grandma is telling you to do. I hate to put it like that, but that's what it is. You need to learn the Bible. You need to just open the New Testament and just become an expert in the New Testament. Let him change your heart. You know, his words are powerful. His words are supernatural. And if you just commit to discovering it the same way that you've committed to discovering all this other stuff, then his word will accomplish that which he sends it to do. He will accomplish the changing of your heart too through his word. God says that he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. He is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. And I just want to encourage people out there to do that. And also, in the context of everything I was saying about this don't die for the InfoWar thing, I want to let you know that you really need to consider history. Turn off the TV and listen to... I'm going to ask Tim to play some stuff, some church history stuff on the Revelations Radio Network while I'm gone, a series by David Guzik, and just get the context for what this is about. I mean, we have never as Christians been in a place where we weren't actually tortured to death by the most gruesome ways that you can imagine. They used to like do horrible things that are even not even worthy of mentioning on air. And in polite company, what they used to do to the average person who would say, you know, I am not going, I mean, being saved is something that happens after, you know, to somebody once they've believed in Christ and repented, not to somebody, it's something that happens when you are born and baptized. You know, that even in the late period, people were still tortured to death for things like that. The it's amazing when you get the context that what we're doing now, meeting in homes or meeting in churches, literally was punishable by excruciating death. And that, I was just thinking about the Anabaptist movement. If you said, you know, I don't think that it's, I don't see anywhere in the scriptures where people or infants are baptized. It's like, I only see people being baptized that like have just become a Christian. I see only adults being baptized. And if you actually went and got baptized as a result of that, you were considered, first of all, radical, even in the Reformation days. But if you did that, if you actually went baptized, it was well known that you would be drowned to death. They would say, oh, you like going under the water so much, we're going to drown you to death then. I want people to realize the severity of that, that people would knowingly get baptized, knowing that it was a high possibility that they would be killed for doing so. That's something that's just so foreign to us. And I don't want you to be for that concept to be foreign to you, because it may be coming back again. And I want you to at least be mentally aware that that is a very real possibility, and it could get worse than it ever got. In fact, I think that it says quite plainly that it will be worse than anything that has happened in the past, which is pretty scary. But I want you to at least get that check that is what's most important. And I know right now it's almost impossible for anybody to be serious about anything or desire to diligently seek the Lord, because you don't need to. And I just want to encourage people to have a change of heart about that, to consider the word that's in front of you and consider prayer and its benefit. And anyway, I won't preach at you much longer here. Speaking of that, I actually am officially licensed to, I've been ordained. So that's awesome. I was ordained through, my church. It was a church plant that we are, taking in part of. And they prayed for me. The whole church prayed for me, and I got these fancy certificates. So I am officially ordained, and that's awesomeness. And I really am so thankful for that and for, my pastor for doing that for me. The other things were Africa. The issue is I will be leaving in a few days for Africa. I'm very nearly completed with all the tasks. It's literally taken me 6 months to get to a point where just this morning I woke up and for the first time in 6 months, I didn't feel completely like I had to immediately get started in order to be able to make the deadline of this trip. So I'm getting close to the end of, I mean, right now it's just a lot of nuts and bolts I have to take care of and, you know, just little things. So that's all coming up really soon. I want to thank everybody for their support and for their prayers. And also I want to mention about Africa. I'll be trying to keep everything updated to a degree. What I'll be doing is I've got a little a voice recorder here, and I'm going to be journaling with it every day. And I'll probably do anywhere from 2 minutes or something like that every day that I'm in Africa. So I hope when I get back, I'll at least have 1 or 2 hour length podcasts. So, and if I can, I'll be blogging or whatnot if I have access to the internet, but I don't really anticipate that. But I am excited. I've got a lot of projects that I've just made some videos for, as far as the initial things and showing some of the things I'll be doing or whatever. And I may put those up before I go. I'm not sure yet. But this will probably be the last I talk to most of you before then. I have a testimony somewhere or two that I may be airing after I leave, or have somebody else air after I leave. And so there should be at least 2 new Nowhere to Runs during the time that I'm gone, I hope. And thanks to everybody. Thanks to everybody for your support. I know I've been kind of busy the last 6 months with the Ancient Aliens thing here recently and the planning for the Africa trip. So I've kind of put Nowhere to Run on the back burner there, and certainly Verse by Verse on the back burner and some of the other things. But I do hope that it's high yield. I think that the Africa thing is going to, I mean, I'm expecting great things that the Lord will do in Africa, and I really do hope to change the country for the better, at least as far as the kingdom of God is concerned. And I also believe that the project of Ancient Aliens is also going to be the most highly impactive movies that I've ever made, and I also think it's going to be the most intense debunking and the most comprehensive debunking, the most subjects ever debunked, and the best they've ever been debunked. So I'm really excited about that. And so thanks for your support of all these ministries and all the things that are going on. I literally couldn't do it without you. I mean, I'm able to do this full time because of people donate. And so that's really awesome. And I really thank the people that have. And I, as I go and as I do all these things, I do pray that whatever fruit that the Lord bears through me in all this stuff, you know, he says to the Philippians that, you know, the fruit might be accounted to your account, you know, because they supported him. And those of you that have supported me through this, I do I do pray that the Lord would accredit all the fruit or you know, equal portions to all of us to your account, that when we all show up, we have treasure in heaven with our name on it. So do pray for the trip. Pray for it to be fruitful. Pray for the maximum amount of good that the Lord can do with the teachings, especially in Africa. The conference is going to be 5 days, 4 days plus the fifth day of me speaking at the church. I've got so many things that I want to teach, and I want those teachings to be very effective. I really tried over the last 6 months of writing those to be as faithful as I could to the word, even though sometimes it was hard. Sometimes it was hard to hear, especially in a context of a multi-denominational conference. I know that I'm going to have people that are going to disagree, especially about things about the gospel or whatever. So pray that it accomplishes what it set out to do, and that the Lord would bless the teaching of his word. I do pray most of all that you guys would pray for this conference, and pray for the cell phone projects, that it would, I really do believe that it can change everything in terms of Bible distribution in lands that are undeveloped lands. By the way, I just posted a video on my backup YouTube account for anybody that's interested. It's basically the PowerPoint presentation I'm going to be giving about the cell phones. It's basically talking to them about what to do with their cell phones and how to receive the information and stuff. I put it there for people that were considering doing something like I was doing. It really has no application except for anybody that's out there trying to do what I'm doing with the distribution of the Bibles or the distribution of the concordance material. But I do hope that if that catches on, then the distribution of scripture in the undeveloped world will be free and will be something that you can go to a conference in India and have 1,000 people show up and have one guy give everybody a Bible in their language. You know, it could change everything. It could change everything about missions. So pray for that. And there's a lot of technical stuff and a lot of just stuff going on with all that stuff that I need help and prayer with. So thanks again. Thanks for listening to me ramble as usual. And I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Nowhere to Run. You can download all of the archives to this show and others I have done for free at nowheretorunradio.com. Your prayers and donations are needed and appreciated. You can partner with me to reach many more people with discipleship, apologetics, and the gospel. Go to Nowhere to Run Radio to help support this ministry. Thanks for your time.